Today on Rockin' the Suburbs,
we pay tribute to a man who could play guitar just like a ringing a bell.
Well, it's a sad day.
In the basement.
Here in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
We lost, even saying legend, I don't think does it justice, right?
Right. Chuck Berry passed away this weekend at the age of 90. He was 90, Jim.
You know, when I see that alert, you know, these days you get the alerts on your phone,
yep.
The news. You and I were out.
We were.
At a soccer match.
Yeah, we were. Wasn't that weird?
My first ever.
A Suburban.
So maybe I shouldn't do that. Bad things happen.
That's right.
So
MLS game.
I get the news alert and, you know, it says, you know, Chuck Berry dies at age 90.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember reading some news stories over the last few months that he has not been in great health. But, you know, you go like, well, he's 90 years old. I mean,
yeah,
that happens.
That's right.
So at first, it's not necessarily like shocking from that standpoint. Not like, say, when like George Michael died or something like that, where you're just like, oh, what happened?
Right. Prince.
Right. But it's still, there's a certain pall that comes over. You just go like, wow, Chuck, you know, because it just makes you reflect on his contributions to culture.
Yep.
You know?
And how could he not exist? He's always existed, right? And I will tell the listeners that we had planned to do a week of recording with some friends of ours, some good friends, and they're going to sleep over all week. But once this news hit, we decided we had to start, you know, the week off and do this news. So we have with us two friends. We have Dan Gursky. Hello, Dan.
Hello. Happy to be here.
Kevin Goff.
Hey. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Thanks, you guys, for joining us on this. We're going to talk through Chuck's career a little bit.
Yep. And who are you?
I am Patrick Foster.
Okay. And I'm Jim Lenihan, and you're listening to Rock in the Suburbs.
That's right.
And so you might hear Dan and Kevin a little bit on this episode, but then you're going to hear them a lot in like a week.
A week or so, yeah.
Other episodes, because the way we record
got a
the
backlog
schedule.
We wanted material to share with you.
We want to get this one up right away.
That's right.
Okay.
I would like to start, Jim, and just read a quote that I pulled from the Rolling Stone Record Guide in an entry about Chuck Berry that was written by Dave Marsh. And Dave wrote, "Chuck Berry is to rock what Louis Armstrong was to jazz. He established the basic mode of expression on the genre's key instrument, the guitar, an approach that shaped almost everything that was played on the instrument after his rise. As a writer, his influence was hardly less great. The sagas of teenage hard luck and romance, the devoted pursuit of half-comic, half-demonic American dream, which was set down in Maybelline, Johnny B. Goode, Back in the USA, and a dozen others, paint an America as big, brilliant, and personal as anyone's."
Hmm. I mean,
I thought that was a great summary.
It's like I was saying, legend doesn't even do it.
Right.
Legend, icon, God on earth. I mean, it's like... I mean, there it is, Patrick, right?
Yeah, exactly right. The entire vocabulary of rock and roll guitar starts there, I think, in many ways, right? How many bands can we all think of that have, in one way or another, either, you know, used a riff like that or taken off from there to go somewhere else?
And the beauty of it is, and we're going to hear some other songs here too, the beauty of what Chuck Berry did, and this is, you know, starting off in 1955, and he was not a particularly young man for being a rock star, being like one of our first rock stars. He was, you know, pushing 30
mm-hmm.
at that time. The beauty of what he did was he, similar to Elvis, took blues and combined with some country and helped to create this new form.
That's right.
The genius of Chuck Berry, I think, probably the biggest contribution he made was, you know, essentially being a blues guy and going up to Chess Records in Chicago and wanting to record because they have blues, you know, it was a blues label and they mm-hmm. had great blues masters there. He turned blues into something that was upbeat.
Yeah, right.
That's the key, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was, you know, he was not doing what, you know, Muddy Waters and other guys like that were doing, that you're down and you're depressed and
that's right.
all this. He made it into something that was a celebration.
Uh-huh, totally.
And from there, you just go like, there's the blueprint for rock music, right?
Exactly, yeah. He sped up the 12-bar mm-hmm. blues and took it somewhere
completely
different.
Cleaned it up, enunciated.
Yeah.
sang with sort of joy and exuberance,
yep.
wrote about cars and girls and having a good time and yep. parties and
very
all
relatable
these things,
subjects
right?
to yep. every American teenager. Yeah.
So speaking of that, let's hear what some people consider to be really like the first, maybe the first rock and roll song. Mm-hmm.
Can't you be true? Oh, Maybelline, why can't you be true? You done started doing the things you used to do. As I was motivating over the hill, I saw Maybelline in a coupe de ville. A Cadillac rolling on an open road, nothing I'd run my V8 for. A Cadillac doing about 95, moves bumper to bumper, rolling side to side. Maybelline, why can't you be true? Oh, Maybelline, why can't you be true? You done started back doing the thing you used to do.
So there you go. All the elements are there. You know, some people will say that the first rock song was That's All Right, Elvis Presley. Some would say Rock Around the Clock, mm-hmm. Bill Haley and His Comets. But
right.
there are a lot of people who say this is really it. That this,
right.
those others weren't fully formed. Rock Around the Clock really was more of a jump blues kind of thing. That's All Right was probably really, you know, by looking at it now, was maybe a little more primitive, a little more country sounding,
mm-hmm.
you know, this, if you played it today, as we just did,
yeah,
you know, sounds like rock and roll, right?
Still
what we
resonates.
Think of, right?
Yeah. 1955, it was recorded.
And it went to number five, yeah, too.
It's pretty incredible. Dan, what do you remember about Chuck Berry?
Well, actually, what I was thinking is, you know, a lot of people who aren't as old probably remember seeing him on the TV doing
yeah.
the duck walk and playing Johnny B. Goode and sort of as more of like a novelty act.
Yeah.
But when you actually start listening to this stuff and you realize how many people copied him and, you know, just lifted it, you know, fully formed, you know, it's pretty amazing. So you sort of have to step back a little bit, I think, to appreciate the influence, at least if you're, you know, didn't grow up then or you're not a serious music fan.
Yeah, you're right. He's so imbued in popular culture. I mean, we were joking before we started about Back to the Future, right? Where they essentially, you know, reinvent the fact that his cousin actually, you know, turned him on to the this white kid who came from the future. But
right.
but what a song to pick, right? That was kind of the song, you know, if you were going to play a rock song.
That's right.
And they also put him in the space capsule, right? That they shot up.
Oh, that's right.
I was going to get to that.
Johnny B. Goode, right?
So, I mean, the beauty of
incredible.
The beauty of the Back to the Future thing is, for kids like us who grew up in the 80s and think of, you know, our parents growing up in the 50s, like we, at least I did, I kind of had this feeling like, well, the 50s were all about rock and roll. That was
yep.
what the culture was like. But what that movie showed you, and correctly so, was like there was this pre-rock era where the pop music was really kind of lame.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, oh, totally.
And
yeah.
this, you know, and you saw it like the way they did that scene, obviously it's, you know, it's comedy, but it was like the kids went wild,
yeah.
right? And it really was that way in the culture.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened, yeah.
Well, and it's interesting, too, that Chuck Berry, you know, he recorded this great run of hits in the mid-50s, right, until the early 60s, I believe, and then was actually sent to jail at one point for a crime he may or may not have committed. It was, you know, there was a retrial and an appeal,
mm-hmm.
and he ended up doing about a year and a half in prison. And came out, I believe, around 63, somewhere in there. Let me check that. Yeah, so he came out in October 1963. But by that point, this entire wave of English musicians, right, had seized upon Chuck Berry and his vision of America as, you know, literally, you know, this incredible thing, and had taken it and just run with it in different directions, including an American band, the Beach Boys, who, you know, were incredibly influenced by Chuck Berry.
I mean, Surfing USA,
there you go,
is a Chuck Berry song.
Yeah,
right, he
really
even
is,
ended up
yeah.
getting songwriting credit right. on it later because they just took it. You and I were texting earlier today. When you think about this, you know, it's all so often in when you listen to music, you think like, oh, band X or artist X inspired band Y, and you hear that and you kind of like look for little clues and find things like that, and you sort of develop this sense of where the music came from and where it's been, where it's going, all of that. In Chuck Berry's case, it's like right there. It's like,
yeah.
like I said, the Beach Boys, they took those licks and that essentially that same structure and just, you know, changed the sound
mm-hmm.
to make it sound like California in the 60s.
Yeah.
The Beatles covered two of Chuck Berry's songs. The Stones covered tons of Chuck
yeah.
Berry songs. Like, it's not even like you have to dig deep or explore this. Right. You're just like, these are, he influenced these bands. And think about that. Three bands he directly influenced. The Beatles, the Stones, the Beach Boys.
Pretty important bands. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's hear, to again, get a sense of rock and roll back in the 50s. And one of the things I just love that Chuck Berry did, this is an iconic song now, but this sort of announcing, sort of writing about rock and roll. He was one of the first guys to do it. I mean, I guess you say rock around the clock, kind of, but not really, because there wasn't really rock and roll then. It was more of like what they were talking about was having fun when they said rock around the
clock. That's
right. He started writing about rock music already and sort of understood like the change in the culture and what was getting the kids excited. And so you had things like Rock and Roll Music was one of the songs. But this one I just love because it's like so kind of like snarky already, you know, back then, right? We would think today like this is what somebody might do, right?
Well, I'm gonna write a little letter. I'm gonna mail it to my local DJ. Yeah, it's a jumping little record I want my jockey to play. Roll over Beethoven, I gotta hear it again today. You know my temperature rising, the jukebox blowing a fuse. My heart beating rhythm and my soul keep a singing the blues. I roll over Beethoven, tell Tchaikovsky the news.
I love that little twang in the guitar too. Yeah, but
absolutely.
Roll over Beethoven, tell Tchaikovsky the news. Yeah. I mean, you write a line like that, you're like, that's gold. That is pure gold.
That is gold. You know? And you know, it's interesting just thinking about Chuck Berry at a time when it's hard to imagine now, impossible to imagine now, that you couldn't just pull out something from your pocket and hear any song in the world you wanted to hear, right? You literally either had to hear it on the radio or you had to hear it in a jukebox, right? Unless you went out and actually bought the record. And so, you know, for somebody like Chuck Berry who grew up poor, hearing a song on the radio was a huge deal, right? You might not even have enough money to play something on the jukebox. So you can relate to that sentiment of like, that song's going to save me if I can just hear it one more time today, you know?
And like I said, there was really something to be said for the fact that the sound that he got was just kind of so clean and crisp, you know, and just, it just hits you so well, you know? The other thing, Patrick, I'd be interested what you say about this, because reading some appreciations today, I guess one thing I didn't fully appreciate about Chuck Berry, I mentioned the line, you know, the killer line about tell Tchaikovsky the news, but I guess I didn't really think too much about his lyrics.
Yes.
You know, I think because, again, he was one of the early guys, and you just sort of have in your mind this bias that, like, rock lyrics didn't really become, you know, poetry until Dylan,
that's right,
you know, came along or something like that, right? But people are talking about how, what a great lyricist he was. What are your thoughts on
that? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, Dave Marsh's quote nailed that. Like, he did write these little sagas, but even in what we heard, you know, from Maybelline, right? That's a story song in many ways, of two cars kind of racing and one engine's going to overheat and you don't know what's going to happen. You know, it's just, but they were these little, you know, these little sagas, these little incredibly well put together stories that related to life in America and life as an American teenager, I think, particularly, right?
And he could do them in like 2.5 minutes,
which is pretty amazing. Yeah.
He had a really, when you look at the lyrics, there's a real knack there for being able to turn a phrase, you know,
without just
picking the right word and doing it right. Mm-hmm. And then making up words too, like motivating.
Exactly.
Which is great. It puts you, it just gives you a sense of, even a better sense of what's happening in that song than if he had used real word, right? Yeah.
There's a line in Nadine, which is one of his 60s songs, where he says, campaign shouting like a Southern diplomat, you know, it's like an incredible little turn of phrase that even people up to that time were not capable of pulling off. And even today, it stands as a monumental achievement to be able to write that so succinctly.
So there was a song that you wanted to play that others, again, have been directly influenced by lyrically, right?
Yeah. Let's hear it. It's called Can't Catch Me.
I bought a brand new airmobile, custom made. It was a flight deal with a powerful motor and some hideaway wings. Pushing on the button and you will hear her sing. Now you can't catch me, baby, you can't catch me. Cause if you get too close, you know I'm gone like a fool.
the turnpike in the wee wee hours. I was rolling slow because of drizzling showers. Yeah, come on, flat top, he was moving up with me. Then come waving goodbye in a little old.
Yeah, amazing. So literally two direct quotes. One, the Beatles come together, and then Bruce Springsteen on his Nebraska album, there's a song called Open All Night where he literally says wee wee hours and, you know, of course, always references the Jersey Turnpike. So just in one song right there, and there's two amazing titans. And it's interesting, I brought my copy of Chuck Berry's Golden Decade, and I got into Chuck Berry because of Bruce Springsteen. When I was younger and I was a big Springsteen fanatic, I had a bootleg where he talks about listening to Chuck Berry's Golden Decade, right?
Oh, really?
One of these long stories he had. So for me, that became a record I had to get. So I went out and bought this copy. Turns out it's basically a completely illegal bootleg. It's from Italy, right? So I have this music, right? I have Chuck Berry's Golden Decade. But as you can see, the liner notes are in Italian, so I couldn't even read it. And it's on some label called Frog Records that I'm pretty sure is just completely illegitimate, even though it says on the back an original Chess recording, right? Yeah, but there's the picture and everything. But it does have, you know, this is really the Golden Decade. It's just kind of a bootleg copy of the record. I later came to find out it was the wrong one. But yeah, you know, and not only quoting his lyrics, but... interestingly enough, I'll tell this quick story. I don't know if people have heard of this time where in the 70s and 80s, and I guess even farther, Chuck Berry would just go and play. You know, he was always on the road.
Right.
And you saw him, right?
I did. Uh-huh. I saw him one time in the late 80s in, of all places, Birmingham, Alabama.
Wow. That's a strange
It would have been 1989. I had a college internship in Pensacola, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
My good friend had an internship in Birmingham. And so on weekends, one or the other of us would drive to the other's place and like crash for the weekend.
Oh, got it.
And go out and have fun. And I was in Birmingham at his place and they were having some like city festival kind of thing, whatever, downtown. And Chuck Berry was one of the acts playing.
That's amazing.
So we went to see Chuck Berry. Yeah.
I was able, and again, we were talking about thanks to the internet, and you'll probably hear in some of our later conversations, you know, where we find out these exact dates and facts of things. So check this out. April 28th, 1973, there was a concert at University of Maryland's Cold Field House. And at the time, as I was saying, Chuck Berry would just pull into town and not have a band.
Right.
He'd use the opening act as his band.
This is fascinating to me.
So on this night, the lineup was the opening act, Bruce Springsteen. The middle band performance was Jerry Lee Lewis. And then the headliner was Chuck Berry. So Springsteen and his band went out and played, you know, mostly songs from like The Wild, The Innocent, and The E Street Shuffle. And then Jerry Lee Lewis played. And then Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band backed up Chuck Berry for a set of like 15 Chuck Berry songs.
I did not really know this. Just read it in the New York Times today that basically Chuck Berry, he didn't even tour with an amp. He basically...
That's right.
The guitar. He would have his guitar and he would drive in his Cadillac just himself. And the promoter, it was up to the promoter to provide the amp and the backing band. And the band had to know like... the entire Chuck Berry catalog, like, and they did not rehearse ahead of time. They just played, like,
went on and played.
And so, oftentimes, the promoter to save money would just use the opening act to be the backing band for Chuck Berry. Isn't that isn't that fascinating?
That's how Springsteen came to play. Right. And apparently, according to Bruce's anecdote here, Chuck Berry walked in 10 minutes before they were supposed to go on stage, and Bruce was getting pretty nervous at that point. And he said, what's the set list? What are we going to play? And Chuck Berry said, well, we're going to play some Chuck Berry songs. They just went on stage.
It's great. I mean, you know, like I said, legend pretty doesn't even describe it.
Right.
It's
he insisted on being paid in cash, right?
Yes.
For all his performances, which later got him in a little trouble, I think. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Kevin, what do you remember about Chuck Berry?
Not too much. So I wish I'm learning a lot from you all, but I will say, you know, I went to school in St. Louis, so you know, his influence is all over that place. So, but really, I don't frame of reference. I haven't heard many of these songs you're playing.
Interesting.
Yeah.
He brought some property outside of St. Louis pretty early on and lived there until now. Mm-hmm. And
he had a club there.
He had a club in St. Louis that he would play for the last 20 years. He played there once a month.
That's amazing.
You know,
I probably could have gone, and I realize now I've I'll never have that chance, I guess.
Yeah, I never saw him. Did you ever see him, Dan?
No, I didn't. Yeah. I was thinking at the club, did he just hire people off the street, or who was the backup band for those shows?
I don't
shows?
Know how it worked for the club. I assume that they're just guys band. In St. Louis who can just play, right? Yeah. So.
Well, and Dan, I want, before we, I know we want to wrap up here and play a couple more songs, but before we came on, started recording, you were telling a little anecdote about another, maybe famous Chuck Berry song, but a little bit later in his career. So tell us that story.
You know, probably in the 70s, I guess, when I was, growing up in a small town in New Mexico, there was a jukebox in, I don't even remember, a Dairy Queen, I think. And the only Chuck Berry song they had in there was My Ding-a-ling, which is not one we're going to play on here, I assume. And it's not one of his high points. But we used to play that, and we thought we were totally subversive because it was, pretty obscene and not a great song. But.
No, it's really,
it's like a big hit for him in the 70s, which is weird.
1972, I believe, only number one hit.
So really?
Isn't that funny?
He had a lot of hit, top 10 singles, mm-hmm. a lot of hit songs in the 50s and 60s, but the only number one he had is this joke novelty song that really is just not worthy of being in the Chuck Berry catalog.
But pretty funny. Yeah.
But good for him. He probably made some money. I maybe got paid in cash. So
maybe he did. Yeah.
So one other quick thing I want to say about Chuck Berry, I think I really developed true appreciation for him in the 80s when I was in college and really, sort of getting into music and trying to explore and learn about, trying to work backward and learn about influences and things like that. And one song that I think it is just a killer. We talk a lot about all the upbeat kind of stuff. And, even when you played like, You Can't Catch Me, right? Mm-hmm. Like, think about how different that is from traditional blues songs, which are always about people, things not going right for them, right? And here's this guy going like, hey, you can't catch me, right? I'm better than you.
That's right.
But there is a different side of Chuck Berry's writing and some really, some sad songs, but mm-hmm. not in the kind of the traditional blues way. It's not That's been right. down so long. They're kind of more personal. They again tell stories. And let me just play a little bit of this, because this song, when you listen to it all the way through, and we're not going to be able to do that now, the twist that it takes, the turn, it's just a killer. It's a punch in the gut.
Yep.
Long distance information, give me Memphis, Tennessee. Help me find the party, trying to get in touch with me. She could not leave her number, but I know who placed the call. Because my uncle took the message and he wrote it. Get in touch with my Marie. She's the only one who'd phone me here from Memphis, Tennessee. Her home is on the south side, high up on a ridge, just a half a mile from the Mississippi Bridge.
So that song is Memphis, Tennessee.
It is, incredible song. It does take quite a twist.
So it's slower.
Mm-hmm.
It's, sort of more plaintive, right? And it's in the age way before cell phones, so help me, That's information. Right. Get me Memphis, Tennessee. He's got this message. He needs to call Marie. He desperately needs to get in touch with her. You think through the whole song that it's his girlfriend, right? It's a romantic thing, right?
Yep.
At the end of the song, you find out it's his kid, six That's years right. old,
Yep.
Oh, man, it's a killer. I mean, and that's just a great nugget of pop music, don't you think?
Completely. It's like the short story, was it O. Henry who always had the twist at the end of his short story, right? That you never saw coming throughout the whole thing. Yeah, exactly. Great example. And just looking at this Golden Decade record, I mean, just like listen to some like Brown Eyed Handsome Man, right? Too Much Monkey Business, No Particular Place to Go, which is a great song about the inconvenience when seatbelts started coming in cars, right?
That's right.
School Days. Bye Bye Johnny. That's an incredible song.
Right, he did
song.
A follow-up
yeah,
song.
Exactly. Sweet Little 16. And, of course, rock and roll music back in the USA. Nadine, You Never Can Tell. Literally, it's a towering canon. Pretty much unmatched in rock and roll. Unless you're going to say Lennon and McCartney, there's not a whole lot of, people.
Okay, so we ran a little bit longer than we usually do,
that's
but
okay.
there's a good reason for that.
Right.
Rest in Power. Chuck Berry.
Rest in Power, Chuck Berry. Yes, he had a heck of a run.
Amazingly, even at 90 years old, we lost him. There are still two of what we consider the founding fathers of rock and roll still alive. Mm-hmm. Jerry Lee Lewis and Little Richard are still around, right?
I don't think Jerry Lee's ever going to die, man. He's too mean and tough, so he'll be around for a long time. Yeah.
Okay, well, please listen to Rockin' Suburbs.
Every day.
Every day, mm-hmm. I think, would be a good recommendation. And you can find us on iTunes or Audioboom or Stitcher or TuneIn. You can hear us talk about a wide range of music from old rock and roll to modern stuff that we're into that maybe just came out last week, yeah, right?
We're all over the place. Wide-ranging conversation next week, too, with some of these guys.
That's right. We had to push it back a day because of Chuck Berry, but tomorrow we have our interview with Dave from Arra. Mm-hmm. So you're going to enjoy that. That's really fun.
Yeah, and Jim has been working very hard to edit that.
All right, so speaking of which, I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
With us, you'll hear more from them in the coming days, are
Dan Gursky
and Kevin Goff.
All right, thanks guys for joining us. You can also find our website, suburbspod.com, and you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at suburbspod, and you can email us rock@suburbspod.com, and you can call our
suburban party line,
which is 612-440-1984. Talk about Chuck Berry.
Yeah, love to hear
you guys
Chuck
have
Berry
to have some good stories. Yeah, right,
absolutely.
Okay, so we were going to play out with another classic Chuck Berry song, right?
Yeah, Dan and I think both had the idea that Promised Land would be a really good way to go out. An incredible travel log song.
Yeah, this is a classic song. It's a great story in about 2.5 minutes. It's got the classic riffs, and it's just a perfect little song, I think.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, thanks, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
I left my home in Norfolk, Virginia, California, on my mind. I straddled that Greyhound and rode him into Raleigh and on across Carolina. We stopped in Charlotte to bypass Rock Hill. We never was a minute late. We was 90 miles out of Atlanta by sundown, rolling out of Georgia State. We had more trouble than turn.
Up on the plane getting steak.
Going, yeah, I know. I love that part. Yeah, where he gets a silk suit. Yeah, it's beautiful.